The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So I thought I would somehow dedicate this talk to the people who have been suffering or killed by the typhoon in the Philippines. When I reflect a little bit, you know, the numbers, headline numbers is 10,000 people killed, but then many more people probably are injured, and many more people are probably affected by that. The family members, friends, community, neighbors, and so the ripple of pain, of suffering, kind of goes out to probably hundreds of thousands of people. People have lost their homes and schools and many things. And it's certainly my hope that the practice we do here, the teachings we do here, helps create, helps shape people who are able to better serve the world, better care for the world around us. And if I didn't think that this Buddhism made a difference like that, I probably wouldn't be teaching it. So with those people in our minds and our hearts, I'll give a talk. And I'll begin by asking if you would go along with doing a short exercise. And so it's, you know, maybe a meditative reflection. So for this purpose, I think it's better if you would, if you could close your eyes, maybe get into your meditation posture. And part of the purpose of this is that in this posture and with the eyes closed, many people find that they're able to reflect more deeply, or some deeper parts inside of themselves can kind of come forth in the reflection. So to take maybe a couple of minutes just to settle in, take a few deep breaths, relax, let go. Letting your breath return to normal and reconnecting to yourself, centering yourself here in your body. And this reflection I'll offer has two parts. And for the first part, if you could try to recall or reconstruct how you are, how you respond to conflict when you are least wise, when you are most stressed out, tired, frazzled, in a hurry, upset, when you have the least access to your wisdom, what is your gut response, your instinctual response to being in conflict? Do you tend to get angry, or do you tend to get afraid? Do you tend to attack and blame? Do you tend to pull away, run away? Do you have the ostrich approach to conflict, putting your head in the sand, pretending it's not there? Many ways, but how do you respond or react when you have least access to your wisdom? And then take a few deep breaths again. And as you exhale, perhaps let go of that reflection and those thoughts. As you exhale, perhaps settling back into your body. And now, consider how you tend to respond to conflict when you have your wisdom available. When you're relaxed and settled, grounded in yourself, calm, connected to what you know is wise, maybe you have time to reflect and consider what to do. How do you tend to respond to conflict then? What are some of the wise ways in which you could respond to conflict? And then to end this short reflection, you can take a few long, slow, deep breaths. Feel your body again, and when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So, at least for now, I'm not going to ask for reports, what came up for you, but did some of you notice that there was a difference between how you respond to conflict one way and without? Yes? Enough of you? And those of you who didn't, you talk to the ones who did. And on Friday I heard a saying that maybe it's fairly common in society, and it sounds like it should be, probably is. Maybe I'm just very late to learn it. But the saying is, when your house is on fire, it's too late to dig a well for water to douse the fire, right? So when your life's in crisis, it's maybe too late to start meditating, if you think meditation's going to help. So you need to kind of dig a well when you can. And so in terms of spirituality or meditation, if that interests you as an approach to life, it helps to start the work of meditation before you really need it. So when the time comes when things are challenging, you have the ability to stay calm, to be mindful, be equanimous, to bring the best tools of meditation or mindfulness into our life when we engage. So sometimes we find ourselves in crisis and conflict and difficulties, and sometimes we don't. I said this way, the exercise I offered you was partly to point out that how we are can affect how we respond to conflict and to crisis. That we might be relaxed and calm and centered and be able to reflect and find our wisdom. Or we might be harried and stressed and not able to reflect deeply so that we respond a different way. It could be the same conflict, the same crisis, but how we are affects how we respond to it. So how we are is variable. And the idea in the path of mindfulness in Buddhism is that we can cultivate and develop ourselves so that the variable in life, us, how we are, that variable, is something we can begin to have some mastery over, some ability to choose, some ability to come from the place that's wisest in us. And this is important because it's very easy to be involved in certain situations, difficulties, challenging situations, and be pulled into the orbit of the crisis, the concerns, whatever, in such a way that how our mood, our feelings, our attitudes, even our thinking is strongly conditioned by the event that we're in, as opposed to our ability to stay unconditioned by it, to stay unaffected by it in a wise way, but be able then to offer to change the situation for the better if it's appropriate to change it. Rather than being conditioned by the event, we can condition the event. Rather than being affected by the event, we can have some possibility of, if we can't affect effectively the event, we can at least have some ability to improve our own personal situation in the middle of it. There's a kind of a graphic image given in the suttas, in the discourses of the Buddha, which I'd like to apply to what I'm trying to say here. This is the way the image is given, is that imagine a person who has gotten herself stuck in mud. The word is translated as mud. Maybe it's better to think of quicksand. And so you kind of, you know, you kind of walked out into the marsh and stepped into the mud and you sunk down to your knees or into it, and you want to get yourself out. You're with your friend, and both of you have walked into the mud, and both of you sunk down to your knees. So then, the image goes on, would be imagine that one of those people tries to pull out the other one. If both of you are equally in the mud, in the quicksand, and you try to pull out the other one, chances are that you'll sink further down. Well, if your friend then sees you're going down, decides to try to pull you out, then, your friend sinks. And so it goes until you're both, a little bit too far under. So in the same way, in this analogy in the Buddhist discourses, it says in the same way, someone who is mired in delusion and greed and hate cannot pull someone else out who is also mired in delusion, greed, and hate. That one person has to be up on the dry land to be able to pull the other person out effectively. And so so if you want to get help, don't get help from someone who's more deluded than you are. Or equally deluded. Because chances are you just pull yourself down. But I want to apply this to ourselves, that sometimes we are so affected by the situation we're in, we're conditioned by it, and our mood can get kind of so pulled into it and caught up in it, that if we try to find a way out, we might try to find a way out in the terms of how we're conditioned, in the mood that we have. So, for example, if we respond to a situation around us by being really angry, and then we try to use anger to get rid of anger, we're thinking in angry terms, aversive terms, and that's the way the thinking are. We're trying to find a solution with thoughts that are spinning around with aversion. It's, very hard. We might actually kind of pull ourselves further and further into the mud. So we have to find another way to pull ourselves out besides the terms of the unwise ways in which we are operating. Make some sense? So I went to my 11-year-old son yesterday. Wanted to work on his invention. He has to make an invention for his invention club at school. And it's that, I don't quite understand what it is, but it has to do with some kind of pencil, new, brand new, radical pencil holder dispenser. And for this, for this purpose, he needed some kind of narrow tube. So we looked around the house, no tubes. So I thought, well, maybe we'll go to Home Depot. But the thing was that I think maybe I ate something that didn't work for me yesterday or something happened to me, and I felt kind of, didn't feel well for a while, and really tired. But I kind of thought, well, you know, this is a chance. He's really enthusiastic about his invention, getting this thing, and it's a chance to do something with him. And so even though I don't feel so well, I think I'll go with him to Home Depot, this huge, you know, huge building supply company. So we went there, and you know, I couldn't quite pull myself out of this funk that I was in, this kind of tired, not feeling good kind of situation. And so the whole way there, I didn't talk to him because I was just trying to get there was enough. And so by the time I got into Home Depot, I thought something else is needed now, because this is not how I am. Is not so good. Pleasant. So what I resort to is mindfulness. It should be no surprise. But mindfulness in that situation sprinkled or informed by investigation, curiosity. So I started getting curious and interested. What's going on? What's going on with me? What's going on in the situation around me? And for a while when he was dealing with his enterprise, I just stood there upright and just kind of looked around and took in what was going on and curious about it all and curious about how I was. And the more I try to be mindful and investigate to see and understand what was going on in the situation, the more what I could feel like, almost like I was being pulled out of my mood that I was caught in and no longer in it. It was there kind of not so far away. If I just stopped kind of paying attention carefully, I could have easily gone back into the ideations, the thoughts, the ideas, the feelings that involved how I was feeling. But it didn't take much in that situation to use my mindfulness to pull myself out. And the feeling was being pulled out, like maybe not like pulled out of mud, but like that analogy, being pulled out. And then I felt free and independent from my mood or the situation, how I was. And I felt much clearer and more present, and it was quite nice. So then I decided, this is good enough. I think I'll keep doing this. I'll stay. You know, it takes a little bit of effort, a little bit of work to keep this. And then as I did that, probably because of doing it, my funk or the way I was feeling, tiredness I had, started to shift and fall away. And then I started feeling much better. Nice story, huh? Thank you. No. So the idea of so they're going to summarize a little bit is that how we are affects how we respond to situations. If we might go into two situations that are very similar, but because we are different, we respond differently. And we don't have to be a victim of circumstances. Circumstances certainly can affect us. We react, we respond in ways. But if we respond in ways that pull out what's not wise in us, if we get stressed or angry or upset or depressed or sad or kind of caught in it, it's sometimes very hard to deal with the situation on its own terms. Meaning, if you're angry or sad, sometimes it's very hard to kind of find your way through that on the terms of the angry thoughts, the sad thoughts themselves. And it can be kind of like a maze. It's possible to go around and around in this maze trying to figure out. Maybe the unfortunate example that I like to use is the clown in the circus who... There's the ball on the circus floor, and the clown goes down to pick up the ball, but just before picking it up, bends over, the foot kicks the ball a little bit, and so he can't reach it, so he has to walk further, bends down, and his foot accidentally kicks it again, so he never can get it. So sometimes certain ways of thinking and trying to figure out and solve problems, we're just kind of pushing the ball further down. We kind of keep the momentum of the kind of thinking going. And rather than solving our problems through our thoughts, because sometimes it's the thinking itself, which is kind of the nature of the thinking itself, which is kind of what keeps the ball being rolling. It's useful to find a way to be pulled out of our thinking, out of the normal way of thinking or thinking these kind of ways, so that we can kind of see the situation in fresh ways and then think in fresh ways. Pull ourselves out of the situation so we're not so influenced by the mood of the moment, the funk, the anger, the sadness, the fear, whatever might be going on. And so this is one of the functions of mindfulness. And it's very important to realize this because otherwise it's easy to give too much authority to how we're feeling. Some people really identify very strongly with their thoughts. They identify very strongly with their feelings and emotions they have. And so, you know, it's that this is identified so strongly, they think that's where the solution is. That's where the problem has to be addressed and dealt with. And sometimes, maybe they does, but we have to, sometimes it's useful to be able to pull out of the mud first, get on dry land, and then be able to turn back and pull your partner out of the mud, pull whatever needs to be done for your life. So how do we do this? I think that mindfulness and meditation can help a lot, dramatically so. If we understand that mindfulness is not business as usual for the mind, it's stepping, in a sense, metaphorically, it's stepping back and observing what's going on rather than identifying what's going on. Some people like to use the word watching what's going on as opposed to being in the drama, being in the soap opera of what's going on. So mindfulness is very, very useful for this because mindfulness means kind of stepping back and clearly recognizing what's happening, clearly being present for what's happening without being lost in the past and the future and things like that. I'm going to do an example for you of something that I use for kids. So if I have this bell in my left hand and the striker in my right, and if I can strike the bell like this, then it makes a nice sound. So, and that can only happen in the present moment, of course, right? If I pick up the striker and hit the bell that was there yesterday, you know, it doesn't really hit. It's kind of like if I'm thinking about the past, I don't really hit or meet the present moment very well. And so then it becomes, if I'm thinking about the past, then it's a little bit like trying to strike the bell and it go like this. I miss it, right? I hit the left side of the bell. Or if I'm thinking too much about the future and I try to strike the bell, strike the moment, see me in the moment, I miss it also, right? I hit the right side of the bell. But if I'm really caught up and upset about the present moment, and so I'm really holding onto it tight and identified with it closely, you know, I'm holding it tightly, the bell makes that kind of sound. I have to both hold the present moment lightly, and I have to be able to strike, hit the present moment, be present for the present moment to make the sound. So this idea of mindfulness, to not be caught in the past, that's one of the ways we kind of are circling around sometimes in a maze that there's no way of getting out. It's easy to get caught in past thoughts. It's easy to be caught in future thoughts. Those of you who have planned the future and then planned again and then planned again and planned again and then a few more times you plan. And for safe measure, you plan some more. You know, maybe it was useful, but I know I've planned the future enough times to realize it was a waste of time. You know, what was I doing all those hours of planning when the event never happened? I started giving up planning, being so concerned with planning when I started to understand that my track record of predicting the future was very poor. And so, it took me, you know, maybe 10,000 times to realize I was wrong. 9,998 of those times, what was coming, that I realized, you know, that's not a very good investment in my time. So to be able to kind of pull back and see, and maybe you don't like the language of pulling back, but pulling back, stepping back, and seeing what's happening now. Just like when I was at Home Depot, what's really going on right now? And looking around, being present. So that's one thing. The second thing that I think is very effective for helping us get a better perspective, pull out of the maze, pull out of the mud, so we can kind of address the issues in a better way, is investigation. To be able to be curious, interested, and try to look more carefully, understand better what is actually going on here. And remember, it's very delicate to do an investigation because it's easy, because it's a little bit thoughtful, it involves thinking. It's easy to get pulled back into identification because of using thinking. So the question is, how does we use thinking so that we don't get to, so we're like not enmeshed in the situation, but a little bit kind of step back and looking at it. And one of the ways that I find most useful, and which the mindfulness tradition teaches, is to investigate the situation as an event that's happening in the present moment. Only try to investigate how it's happening here in the present, now, here and now. On Friday we had our chaplaincy training here, and Paul Heller, one of the teachers of it, did a wonderful exercise for people. He had them reflect about a situation in the last few days that was quite difficult for them, and trying and challenging for them to be in, and you know, kind of like the exercise I gave you, kind of, you know, their wisdom wasn't there and they were challenged. And then they were supposed to go into dyads, partner with someone else, and tell the other person only how they were feeling and reacting in that situation. And they didn't have to say anything whatsoever about the story. People like a little bit disoriented. What? I can't tell the story? The story is like everything. No story. Just how you were, how you responded, how you reacted to it all. And so that kind of they help them look at how they were. Because it's easy when we tell a story to get involved in blame and issues and it wasn't really my fault, justifying ourselves or whatever. But none of that, just how you were. And then, after doing that for a while, then the exercise shifted to think of a situation in the last few days where the best part of you responded to a difficulty and challenge, and something went well for you. Now, how did that feel for you? Don't tell the story. But just how it was. So that was an exercise to help people stay with their own subjective experience of it all, without getting involved in the story-making mind. So investigation can be something like that, is don't get involved in the complicated story aspect of it, but try to really see what's actually unfolding and happening in the moment right now. What is seen, heard, smelled, tasted, touched, felt? What's going on? Look more carefully. What's going on more carefully? So in my situation at Home Depot, not only did I kind of look around what was going on at Home Depot, it's fascinating to look and see how people are there. And the smells, wonderful smells, different aisles have different smells. But also what was going on inside of me. How did I feel my tiredness? There was a kind of a little bit of feeling of kind of, mud mind going on. My mind wasn't quite operating the normal way, and I could feel kind of this heaviness and weight that was operating. And so I was investigating, looking, and feeling in the present moment, this is what's going on. So it's kind of like putting a magnifying glass in the present moment and understanding it as a present moment and phenomena more deeply, not thinking the complexity of the situations and, what did I eat yesterday and why did I eat what I ate? I shouldn't have eaten that. And I didn't really need to eat and, you know, it might have been useful to investigate for other purposes, but that pulled me out of the moment, back to home, rather than investigating here. So in terms of being pulled out of the mud, investigation in what's happening in the present moment is often can be very, very helpful. The other thing that's helpful is putting effort into doing this. And I know I've succumbed sometimes to the kind of the idea that, you know, I shouldn't have to make effort to be better off. It should just be given, because effort means that somehow I don't deserve it. Effort means that, you know, that there's a big should. Effort means that, I'm burdened with a requirement. It's much better to get enlightened without any effort. If there's effort and without effort, then effortless way is so much more pleasant. That's what I want. And, I'll just have to read more books to find that way. But so some effort is needed, some engagement, some waking and effort. And sometimes when we're in a funk, it's hard to bring that effort up to arouse it. And so we need some courage, we need some inspiration, something to kind of bring a spark to kind of do this work of mindfulness and effort. And then to use some of the teachings of the tradition, something that is also helpful is a sense of joy or delight. And in fact, when I was at Home Depot and I could feel myself being pulled out of how I was feeling, there was a sense of mild delight. Kind of, oh, look, this is nice. This is good. And so to learn to appreciate that in the present moment, the joy or the delight that's happening, it can be hard to do because there could be these very strong currents of thinking that pulls us back into the mud. I could feel the delight, I could feel present, and then it's so easy to have a thought, oh yes, Gil, but you ate that food and you should have known better, and how could you have been such a mindless person, spent your life devoted to mindfulness and you had that food, and you're a disaster. And so then I get pulled in, right? As opposed to appreciating the joy that's there, the delight, and be fed by, nourished by that. And then there's the tradition also puts emphasis on things like tranquility, calmness, appreciating calmness, being calm, relying on calmness to help us find our way in these situations. It also puts emphasis on concentration, on stability, and being focused. So stay focused on the task at hand. Find yourself stabilized in here. And then it puts emphasis on equanimity, one of the most beautiful emotions you can ever experience when it's done in the context of deep, concentrated states, is equanimity. And so, in fact, that yesterday at Home Depot and afterwards, as I got myself established in this kind of more open, relaxed, present state of mind, I delighted in the equanimity that arose because there were things happening, with desires and wants and questions and concerns of an 11-year-old wanting a part that took a lot of, conventionally would take a lot of patience, and going here and going there. But I didn't need any patience because with that exercise I was doing, I had equanimity. Equanimity meaning I wasn't being pushed around by it. I wasn't being caught by it. I wasn't concerned with it. So, okay, so just this is what's happening and my mind is relaxed now. And if this is what the kid wants, I'm happy to go and let him. It's his invention. It's his exploration of the world. It's his way of finding something. And my job is to accompany him. And in fact, it turned out that he figured out what was needed better than I did. So it was a good thing that I backed off because he was wiser than I in the end. So mud, the mud of identification. We identify so strongly with things, the mud of our preoccupation. And it's a great thing to step out of the mud, to step out of the maze, rather than kind of constantly being pulled further and further into the mud or just spinning around and around in all the byways and highways of the mazes of our minds. So learning how to do this is a way of learning how to enter into any situation, to have some control or some way of monitoring yourself, some ability to choose how to enter into any situation and to find your wisdom in the situation. How to shift and change yourself enough so you can be wise in a situation rather than unwise. And that's the hope, that this practice that we're doing here is shifting you so that more and more you live in the kind of way, how you are, is a way that helps bring forth your wisdom more and more in life rather than your unwisdom. So my hope is that you certainly are wiser people, and in that wisdom you also become more compassionate for this world and the people of the world who suffer. So thank you.